Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. And we're recording this podcast at the end of our June board week here in Beijing, where we're also hosting the Beijing International Sustainability Conference. So today we're going to talk about the jurisdictional information that we launched this week, some of the recent travels I've been on, talk about this week's board meeting, and having a bit of a look ahead to what's coming up for the ISSB. So, Emmanuel, where do you want to kick off?
Thank you, Sue. Good morning, good evening, everyone from Beijing. So I'll start with an important announcement that we made earlier this month, which is about the publication of our initial set of 17 jurisdictional profiles that will provide transparency to capital markets, which evidences the high degree of alignment with the ISSB standard that was achieved. A year ago, we committed to publishing detailed jurisdictional profiles describing the adoption of our standard to complement our inaugural jurisdictional guide, and we have delivered on that promise, including information about each jurisdiction's stated target for alignment with the ISSB standards and the status of its sustainability-related disclosure requirements. The profiles provide a detailed current state of play to investors, banks, insurance companies who continue to struggle with, as I said during the announcement, the lack of appropriate, comparable, and reliable information on these critical factors that affect business prospects. We also published 16 snapshots, so that's a total of 33 in total, with high-level overviews of other jurisdictions' regulatory approaches that are, for some of them, very close but still subject to finalization. So we will continue to provide support for jurisdictions as part of our regulatory implementation program. I really encourage everyone here to view the profiles and snapshots on our website to find out more about jurisdictions and journeys, and you will find a lot of granularity and precision about which companies is in the regulation, who is still out, who will come, and why and how sometimes regulatory adoption has been very close to a full adoption, but has a small detail that doesn't make it quite. So all of that is also going to be a lot of education for our audiences, our stakeholders, about how precise we want to be in our bilateral conversations that lead to the publication of such information that we hope to become the very authoritative and official source of information to understand precisely where jurisdictional approaches are. So, this week, Sue, we are in Beijing. We are hosting a June board meeting here and are having our great Beijing International Sustainability Conference. We look forward to meeting stakeholders, discussing actually profiles as well in so many ways and adoption from China, Hong Kong, and indeed the Asia-Pacific region. So there is a lot of interest around our standards here in China. Sue, you were engaged in a training as we started the week here with many participants, but you've also been traveling a lot. So in the Dog and Pony Show, as I was led to say this month ago, the pony was certainly much more visible than the dog. So up to you, Sue, can you tell us more about your travels?
Sure, and hello to the people I saw in Singapore, Malaysia, and indeed in Australia, who many of whom commented on the fact that they listened to our podcast and were interested last month to find that you identified yourself as the dog with the broken leg.
Indeed I did.
So, yes, lots of travels. And so my travel started with outreach in Singapore and in Malaysia, where we held our first preparer training sessions in collaboration with local bodies such as the Accounting and Corporate Regulatory Authority and the Institute of Singapore Chartered Accountants in Singapore and the Singapore Exchange, and with the Malaysian Accounting Standards Board in Malaysia. Sort of two-day events where we were talking in detail about the requirements and our standards, which was a great way for us to tell people about our standards, but also a really great way with the questions that people asked to get a good understanding of where people are at. So I thought, really great engagement. So thank you to those who are listening who were part of that. Then I went to Australia, and the sort of key focus for me there was different. It was participating in a couple of events that were focused on investors. So the Australasian Investor Relations Association and the Responsible Investment Association, Australasia. So it was great to be at those venues and to see lots of our stakeholders in Australia, and to see the momentum right across the Asia-Pacific region. Real support for our standards, a real level of interest in the application of our standards, and in all of these three jurisdictions that I've mentioned, Singapore, Malaysia and Australia, coming up for starting the reporting using our standards. Mm. So people are very engaged because it's very real to them. So I think it was good timing to be there, and it was really, I found it quite invigorating. I loved chatting about our standards, so it was great to be there with Verity, my fellow board member, and with Neil Stewart from our staff. So thanks to them as well for helping out on that. And that brings us to, you know, our day job, Emmanuel, the board week here. Do you want to kick off talking about what we've been up to?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Sue. And thanks for, you know, all this travel and engagement. And by the way, thanks to everyone at the ISSB and our staff that are engaging with regulators, with you know, market participants, companies, preparers, audit firms all around the world, as we now have to cater to the needs of you know, more than 35 jurisdictions in total that have declared a commitment to use or adopt our standards. That is a pivotal moment, and in many ways, I'm you know, so happy that this week we entirely dedicated our board sessions, public session, to the enhancement of the SASB standards, because it's been so much our view and confirmed through so many conversations that industry-specific information is really one of the most decision-useful, cost-effective way of informing market capital allocations on sustainability topic basis. And we know that the SASB standard is therefore a very convenient and proportionate way of ensuring proper application and ensuring the implementation of IFRS S1 in particular. So it was very timely. It's a huge work that's been done by our team, the SASB team, by also the BAM, the Board Advisory Group that's been looking at SASB under the chair of Jeff, who has Jeff Health, who made that point during the board session that it was like 15 years of his life dedicated to spearheading, you know, not only as a board member here, but also as the chair of the SASB board before, and truly, you know, a massive piece of work that landed on the table of the board this week. We voted unanimously to ratify the exposure draft for the enhancements of the SASB standards that are a core part of our current technical agenda for 24 to 26 technical agenda. It will include proposed amendments to 9 priority SASB industries, and proposed as well amendments to the IFRS S2 industry-based guidance, the Appendix B to S2, as well as a number of consequential amendments into 41 additional sectors in the SASB standard. So it's a really far-reaching consultation. We expect a variety of stakeholders to be interested in and provide comments. The importance of stakeholder feedback in informing our decision and amendments we make is critical. We won't change the requirements unless it is the right thing for those using our standards to improve the information that investors will get. And we will really focus our engagement, as we discussed during the board session, to specific industry focus with industry groups, business organizations, you know, the buy side and the sales side analysts, at investors, to really ensure that we are targeting the true users of those particularly focused standards that industry-based is designed to be. As a consequence of both, the massive piece of work that it is and the length of the exporter graph itself, its Rubik's Cube aspect of, industries and complementing S1 and S2, but also interoperability that is front and center of that work. I really was very pleased personally that there is a table reconciling with TNFD, a table reconciling with the GRI, who we borrowed from directly from a number of disclosures as well. Also reference to the ESRS and EFRAG in such a convenient way to understand the efforts of additional easier interoperability that we're bringing. I think that is a very comprehensive work. And there was a discussion among us ourselves about the proposed 120 by default period, where we landed into a different approach at the end of the conversation, acknowledging that because it's a very, very special moment coming up with such a forceful amendments, enhancements of the SASB standards, we decided that also because of the need for translation in many parts of the world, it would actually be adequate to have a slightly longer period, and decided unanimously that 150-day comment period would be appropriate, and clearly making the point that it wasn't in no way a precedent for future consultations. But I think because of that inaugural situation here, we felt more comfortable with that. And maybe, Sue, on that topic, but also in a number of more details, you'd like to say a few words as well, please.
Yeah, sure. It's a big moment for us, and I echo your thanks for the staff team in particular who have worked so hard on this, and all of our stakeholders who have already engaged in our conversations with us in developing these proposals even before we expand the outreach to everybody else who wants to talk to us. So big thank you to the staff for this document. It's an important moment for us. So I think I'd just emphasize that there's really three distinct components of this document. And I think a really important thing to note is for those who are used to seeing consultations that are published either by us or indeed by our sister board, this isn't necessarily an exposure draft that you should pick up and read from the front page until the back page, because it's really going to depend on who you are, which bits of the document you should read. And, you shouldn't necessarily read the whole thing. And that's because there are these three distinct components. So we ask for information in a pretty comprehensive way in terms of the entire standard for eight industries in the extractive sector and for processed foods. So if you're a company in one of those industries, or if you're an investor that covers one of those industries, you might want to look really closely at that particular standard, and that might be all that you need or want to engage with. We then have a series of targeted amendments that we propose to make to 41 other standards. And these are on topics where we found consistent content arising from the work that we did on those nine priority industries, where we can see that there's common disclosures with these other 41 industries. And so we're proposing aligning these disclosures so that they're consistent across industries to facilitate our comparability. So this is on topics of greenhouse gas emissions, energy management, water management, labor practices, workforce health and safety. So if one of those topics is something that you're particularly interested in, you might want to approach the exposure draft looking at that. And there's a distinct portion of the exposure draft focused on that. And so that might be the piece that you want to read. And then there's a third piece. Those of you who are familiar with our standards that we already have in place might remember that the industry-based guidance that is an appendix to our climate standard IFRS S2 was derived from the SASB standards. And so the content in the SASB standards, the climate content, and the content in the guidance in IFRS S2 is aligned. And we're proposing that where we make proposed amendments to the SASB standards on climate content, we keep that alignment. So there's a third piece of this exposure process, which is asking for feedback on whether we should maintain this alignment with the SASB metrics. So if you're somebody who's only interested in climate reporting, you might want to focus mainly on that. And that sort of focused exposure drafting links across to the SASB ED. And there's a section at the back of the S2 exposure draft, which explains which of the disclosure requirements in the main SASB ED are relevant for the S2 proposed update. So depending on where you come in terms of your areas of interest, you might approach this document in quite different ways. And to facilitate that, we will have a survey as well that will help somebody approaching the responses, you know, identify which questions and which areas of the exposure drafts to focus on to aid the way that you approach the document. So I'm really excited about it. I think the whole board was really excited about it. I chaired the meeting and I found it hard to wrap the meeting up on time. We managed to do it, but we had a lot to say, both about the content of the documents, but also the comment period. And that's because I think we all see this as a really, really big moment. This is an opportunity for the whole IFRS stakeholder community to really engage in depth, particularly on those 9 standards, to tell us whether you recognise your industry in your jurisdiction and whether you think this would be the decision useful information that investors need to really understand the long-term sustainability and resilience of your business. So this is your moment, guys, to help us to make sure that this material is helpful for you to communicate with investors. So these wonderful exposure drafts should be published very early in July. So look out for that. And the other thing I'll say before I hand back to Emmanuel is that in addition to the exposure drafts, we're also planning to publish some new educational material around the time that the exposure drafts are published. And it's educational material that really sets out a more detailed explanation of how the SASB standards and how the industry-based guidance in IFRS S2 can be used to help you provide disclosures when you're using the ISSB standards. So how that relationship works between the ISSB standards and that industry-based guidance. And those of you who are familiar with our standards will know that there's some famous words in these standards that you shall refer to and consider, the SASB standards and the industry-based guidance in S2. This educational material will provide some more colour in terms of what those words mean and so how to approach the use of those materials when you're using the ISSB standards. So I hope you're all inspired to read these documents and tell us what you think when we put them out at the beginning of July. So with Emmanuel, let's look forward maybe to the IFRS Foundation conference when you and I will be together in London at the beginning of next week.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. But just before going forward, I mean, you just mentioned a couple of things that I just would like to reflect super briefly. In August 22, we consolidated with the VRF. That was a big moment where, we welcomed the technical team, some board members from the SASB family. And, I remember all the conversations we had at that point in time about how much of the SASB legacy would be able to capture what, and how important it would be in our work and the architecture of the standards and all of that. And I hope that, by then the trustees of the VRF, Janine and, the leaders of the VRF and others can, really witness the magnitude of the work that's been accomplished to ensure that the legacy is lively, growing and thriving. You were mentioning that indeed you are chairing this, this important moment. It's also a reflection that you've actually been chairing all of our public sessions since day one, too. And I think I just wanted to thank you for that work that you do every month so efficiently. And great to see that we're progressing, so smoothly in our agenda in such a turbulent time overall and momentum. So, with that, indeed, IFRS Foundation Conference, that's Monday and Tuesday, 23rd and 4th of June, 25. Most of you who are going to listen to us would have probably done that after that period of time. But if you do on Monday or before, please join us, you know, digitally or online or in London. There will be a number of important things being discussed and maybe issue, as we are going to have a very packed Climate Week agenda and some important announcements. Do you want to share more about this?
Sure, yes. So it's fortuitous that the conference aligns with London Climate Action Week, and we've got lots of things happening next week in addition to our conference. And an important moment for us next week will be the launch of our new educational material on our transition plan disclosure guidance document, which is a new piece of educational material. So it doesn't change what you're required to do when you use our standards, but it helps you apply our standards well. And this is part of our ongoing commitment to support the implementation of the of IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. So in this case, this is a document that builds on the disclosure-specific material that was developed by the Transition Plan Task Force, which we took responsibility for at the IFRS Foundation during 2024. We've now evolved that material with this new guidance that we'll be publishing next week. And it is guidance which seeks to enable entities to provide high-quality information about their climate-related transition when they're applying IFRS S2 to support the ISSB's global baseline. So it's really explaining what information you should disclose if you do have a plan to reduce your emissions, or indeed if you have a plan to adapt in response to physical climate risk to be more resilient. What would good disclosure look like when you're using IFRS S2? So I hope that this will be really a useful document for those of you who are working on applying IFRS S2. We also hope it's a really useful document for jurisdictions around the world, because what we hope here is that this is part of the ISSB's global baseline, so that jurisdictions can look to this material and use it to support implementation of S2 or the local version of S2 in jurisdictions around the world. That it can complement anything that a jurisdiction might be doing to explain what the contents of a good transition plan look like, or whether you should have a transition plan. That's not what we focus on, but if a jurisdiction does that, this document that we're publishing would explain what sort of information about that plan you might want to disclose. And indeed, if a jurisdiction wants some additional information about a company's planning, for example, to explain how that plan that a company has might contribute to a jurisdiction's particular objectives from a climate perspective, a jurisdiction can build on this guidance document using the building blocks approach. So we really hope that this document's going to help companies prepare good disclosures and understand what S2 is asking for, to really support high quality information to meet investors' needs, and also to address the risk of fragmentation of disclosure in transition planning around the world. So a really important moment for us. And again, a big thank you to our staff team who have led this really important work to get this document ready to go out to the market. And with that, Emmanuel, do you want to wrap up?
I will, too. Thank you. And just saying it's been exactly a year since we finalized our technical agenda for 24-26. I really feel that we are well on time in the delivery of this agenda after the last few months and this board week here in Beijing. The announcement, as you just said, of our transition plan disclosure guidelines next week, which will be exactly a year after we published the agreement with the TPT that we would take the legacy of their work. So it's been, again, an incredible amount of work and delivery. I know how much these materials are expected, in particular in the banking sector and the supervision of the banking sector in so many ways. That will close this session of the Dog and Pony Show, stopping by here in Beijing. And next month we'll be in Frankfurt for our board week, and we'll look forward to updating all of you there. Thank you and stay tuned.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. To stay up to date with the latest developments from the IFRS Foundation, the International Accounting Standards Board, and the International Sustainability Standards Board, sign up for email alerts on our website, ifres.org, or find us on social media. Please contact us on communications@ifres.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions.